Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since gold, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on Nuke Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Olivia Deramos, the founder and CEO of Communa, the social networking app designed as a digital safe space for women and marginalized genders. Welcome to the show, Olivia. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Tell us a bit about your background before everything, before Communa, and how you got to this point now. I think that'd be great for our listeners to know a bit more about.
Definitely. I'm a tech outsider. I did not grow up wanting to be in tech. I got a degree in international relations. It's what brought me to the UK originally, actually. I studied abroad in the UK and then ended up finishing my university career here. And really wanted to work in nonprofits, women's anti-violence work was really where I had my early professional experiences. At the same time, what I had to experience actually when I was still in the US was actually a really traumatic incident that too many young women and women of all ages experience, which is that I had to go through a sexual assault. And in that experience, I didn't really have a built-in support network. I was a college student. So I was looking around for resources, for community, for connection to help get me through that trauma and the trauma that came after, which was pretty much years of a legal battle with my then abuser. So I was at a loss. It was really when Instagram and TikTok, you know, where these platforms were first coming out, and I had thought, you know, this is where I can find community. This is where I can find other women who have been through similar experiences. And I ultimately didn't find that on those platforms. And what I did find was almost re-traumatizing in many senses, right? Because I was looking at women who were brave enough to speak out openly about similar experiences, but instead of being able to connect with people like me, they were battling harassment and further abuse and narratives that were very hard to see as a survivor of trauma. And so that's really the context of, you know, my early professional career and my personal experiences that led me to being a social media founder. It's certainly very different from, you know, the story of a Mark Zuckerberg, for example.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that with us. Very unfortunate to hear some of your experiences. But on the other side of things, I think it's fantastic what you've done in terms of with the app and how you brought this, you know, forwards. Talk a bit about what gap did you see in social media in terms of the landscape that led you to build Communa?
Yeah, definitely. So many of these issues are interconnected, right? And we really don't appreciate enough, I think more so now in 2025, the impacts that the digital world has on our lived realities, the impacts that words have and that digital violence has on real life violence, right? We have heard a big narrative in the UK recently around the Manosphere. And, you know, I'm glad that that's coming to the forefront, right? Because these are dynamics that have not only been created online, but also amplified, worsened, and perpetuated. And so the social media landscape in general, at best, we're looking at comparison culture. We're looking at a culture of performance versus connection, a system that is really revolving around an advertising model that is the product. The product isn't connection as it's been sold to us. We need social media platforms. It's not a question of getting offline, right? It's a question of how can we make social media better and can it be better? And I really do think it can. There are some really obvious mistakes happening more broadly that are resolvable. And so from the kind of lighter aspect of it to the serious aspect, there's tons of gaps in social media. And I like to remind people that it's a very new industry, right? So just because we've seen social media done in a certain way to date doesn't mean that we're stuck in this pattern. We can break out of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. What made you realize existing platforms weren't working for women and inspired you to build something new?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was my personal experience and also the loneliness that I encountered in that. And really feeling so alone through trauma. And so alone, I think, in general, going through life as a young woman, right? There are so many weird little questions that we do need to ask that we don't really have people to ask. And even when it comes to topics around like assertiveness and asserting yourself in the workplace, your first job, our universities, our schools don't really prepare us for that. A lot of times our family members don't prepare us for that. Our peers don't. And so what happens when you need to ask these questions? Well, you can't ask them on social media because you'll be trolled for it. And even outside of, misogyny and the gender issue, we are experiencing a social environment where everything you say has to be a hot take. And even if it's not a hot take, you're going to be bullied for it. And that dynamic is not an accident. That dynamic happens because social media platforms, really perceive this to be a revenue driver for them. So they have trained their algorithms to encourage anything that could spark anger, or even if your piece of content that is authentic and asking a real question that deserves to be answered, they might push that piece of content to people who are likely to be angry at seeing that because those people will watch it, they'll share it, and they'll comment, but all of those actions will actually have a negative impact on the poster. And these social media companies, willfully continue to perpetuate that dynamic. So it's not even that they're not showing up for women in marginalized groups. It's that they are willfully harming us in the name of their financial prospects. Though I will say there's a huge financial opportunity in respecting users and user well-being. So that's a flawed way of thinking, whether you're looking at it from a business sense or a social impact sense.
Do you know any? You might not know. I'm just asking it. Stats-wise, in terms of online abuse, do you know any of the stats, or you might have heard of, or anything like that at all?
Certainly. So there is so much evidence, and even Facebook will self-report a number of really disturbing pieces of evidence around social media's impacts as it stands today on women, marginalized communities, and children. And it's not a question of whether or not we can prove that this is happening. It's a question of getting platforms like Meta and even getting other startups, obviously community. This is our whole mission, just to get people to care, but getting people in tech in general to care. And so, for example, I want to say, over 60% of women of all ages have encountered some sort of online abuse. I would say also, we've seen in the studies that Communia have done, we did a big report on over 2,000 women's social media experiences in 2023. We also saw a lot of similarities in the experiences between young women, Gen Z, and older women too, right? As long as you're online, you're experiencing harm. That's a very common dynamic that you're encountering. It's almost unavoidable. So we could go on for days about all these different stats to point out. At this point, I'm very frustrated because, we've acknowledged the problem and we have to move forward, right? What are we going to do about it?
Absolutely. What was the main type of abuse that was coming through from your findings?
A lot of abuse happens in the comment section and in the DMs. And we are seeing a dynamic where it's harder to hold people accountable if they're in somebody else's comments. It's not impossible, and certainly it's not impossible for social media companies, right? We have the report button. Unfortunately, it takes so many people to report one account for that mainstream social media platform to take it seriously. And so it's there and often unmoderated, right? So unfortunately, the other side of this is while there is a huge culture of extremes on social media when it comes to anything extremist, right? When it comes to misogyny or racism or homophobia, at the same time, even things like death threats, right? Or further threats of physical violence or sexual violence, those all too often are not moderated. And that is a very weird dynamic that is all too common. And if you're scrolling through a TikTok or a Instagram Reels, you might see content that seems fine. But if you look in the comments, again, that's where that dynamic and that interpersonal aspect of social media, which is actually the most important part, gets really scary really quickly.
Can some of the social media platforms, can they ban people if from one? Because that's my understanding. If something's inappropriate, rude, whatever it might be, my understanding is social media platforms can ban certain profiles. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, they're actually legally required to. Everybody, you know, signs the terms of service when they use a social media platform. And yes, it is, you know, within the purpose of social media to encourage freedom of speech, right? Freedom of expression. That being said, you know, we have to stop looking at social media companies as, you know, the quote unquote town square. And even if we do continue looking at them as town squares, you know, town squares have rule of law. You know, you can't abuse someone in your real life town square. So you really aren't supposed to abuse someone in the digital town version of that. But social media companies, you know, are very adept and have spent, you know, millions, if not billions of dollars in lobbying to kind of get around these kind of like logic traps, for lack of a better way of explaining that. But you can take any action you want as a social media company on accounts that are not respecting others and are hurting others. Just too often, they don't choose to. And I would say to add to that, you know, the only laws that are around for social media companies actually ask social media companies to take action on those accounts. There's no law that says you can't take action on an abusive account. It's quite the opposite.
Have you heard from any people that have suffered from online abuse and what emotionally they go through?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that, you know, I witness every single day on Communia. We have a lot of people coming to the app as a safe space, as a refuge from the harm that they experience on mainstream platforms. And it's very frustrating because Communia plays an important role in this dynamic in showing that safe spaces can exist and can be run at scale. But the problem will never fully be resolved until mainstream platforms also take these issues seriously, and not only take them seriously, but also make them their core priority. But, you know, if you're being bullied online, it overwhelms your life. It makes it so much harder to maintain real life relationships. It makes it harder to do well in school if you're a college student. It makes it harder to engage with your family. And, you know, we're not an app for men, but certainly I know, again, the conversations in the media are largely around the male loneliness crisis, which I know we might touch on later. So I don't want to get too into it now. But, you know, for men, you know, they're a lot less likely to reach out to their family members. They're going to be more self-isolated. And frankly, that's a dynamic that happens no matter your gender and no matter your age. So it really starts small, but it has lasting real world impact.
Absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So thank you, Olivia, into the, you know, introduction of Communia and what you do and that kind of thing, which I think is brilliant how you're helping people. Why do you think existing social media platforms may fail when it comes to supporting women and marginalized groups?
I think it really just comes back to this advertising model that they are reliant, where there are billions and billions of dollars, right? They're a lot less likely to take action on any account if that's going to minimize the eyeballs that they get on the ads that they're, you know, profiting off of. And that engagement at all costs model is really central to these, you know, nuanced issues that we're trying to grapple with internationally, you know, within the UK and elsewhere, you know, certainly when it comes to the Online Safety Act. And I don't think that until we address that inherent business model problem within social media today, that we will also ever get to the root of the problem. So there are quite a few things that have to happen here. All of them, I think, are, most of them at least, are achievable, especially to address the most urgent aspects of these issues. You know, we just need to start being more collaborative.
Absolutely. I think it's awful, online abuse. It's just got, I don't know, it just may have got worse since the beginning of the internet, obviously, because people are able to comment. I think the other problem is some people may create fake profiles. That's yes. Another problem, isn't it? Do you hear of that at all, where people might be getting, yeah.
And I love that you brought that up. That's a great point. And what most people don't realize is that over half of social media accounts are fake. And these bots are very, very, very advanced and are very convincing. I actually, it's embarrassing to admit, but I once had someone approach me on social media, and, you know, they were talking about how they'd experienced something horribly, and I felt really bad for them. And so I started engaging with them. And in the end, that was a bot. That was someone pretending that they weren't who they say they are. And even today, I couldn't quite tell you if it was a bot or if it was just a catfish. And that's another part of this, is that mainstream platforms, if you look at where they're saying that they're going, they're leaning into generative AI. They're leaning into creating bots themselves. And so where they're trying to take society digitally is not a digital world of connection. It's a digital world where we're surrounded by bots and we don't know what's real and what's not. And that's a whole other level that is being added to, you know, these issues of online abuse and social well-being and so much else.
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable how technology and, you know, and you mentioned AI and how everything's moving forwards. And you're right, with bots being designed by, it could be one person designing, we don't know, loads of bots. And they might, I don't know how it works, it can be used to comment and do whatever. There might be someone hiding behind these bots. And it's just, it sounds like it's going to be it's going to be quite challenging to try and identify the actual person, maybe, in future, because of the way with AI and technology, you don't know really who's behind, you know, whatever it is, and you don't know who you're talking to anymore. Is it a person? Is it? Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that we do on Communia that really resolves this before it becomes a problem is that we actually require everyone to verify their identity before they can communicate to others. And so we really need to be looking at simple solutions like that, you know, whether it's on a niche platform like Communia or a larger platform, before this gets out of hand, because, you know, we live in a world that is very polarized right now. And that polarization is only going to get worse when we cannot rely on knowing that we are both looking at the same reality, right? If you're looking at a different reality that I'm looking at, we will never come to an agreement. We will never have societal health, and our personal health will, you know, also suffer. It's all connected.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the people you must talk to that have experienced online abuse, you mentioned a lot of good points, but what comes out for me, which is really key, is that it can cause some people to have trust issues, because now you're not sure who you're talking to anymore. Is it a person or is it not? And if it is a person, or if you think it's a person, now you're thinking, when you go out now to where some, not everyone, but some people might go out and think, right, I can't really express myself like I want to, because I don't know how that's going to be responded to, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Totally. And it takes so much bravery to be vulnerable, whether that's in real life or online. And I think what a lot of people experience is that they'll encounter rejection even, and that rejection will harden them or make them more afraid of reaching out to other people in the future. And it will almost take away connective and community and resources that you would otherwise be able to do, because the pain of being rejected, especially like literally for humans psychologically, is in our brains almost as painful as, you know, physical pain. And so it's very hard to overcome that. And then, yeah, if you're being trained over and over again to distrust everything, that dynamic again will only become more difficult to dig yourself out of personally. And, you know, it's a scary and complicated dynamic, but I will say the spark of hope here is that there are solutions, and a lot of the solutions are very simple. It's not a popular thing that I say within the tech world, but it is. We just have to choose to do them.
What exactly is social health, and why do you think we need to talk about it as much as we do mental or physical health?
Yeah, so social health is a really important area of our well-being, right? It's just as important as mental and physical health. You know, it's not really that exciting to talk about in pop culture. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that social health has been historically, you know, over the centuries implied until very recently. It's not really had to be something that we thought about when we had a very, you know, community-centric types of societies, right? When we, you know, even had communities that were more, you know, religious, right? When it was more common to go to church. You know, I'm not particularly religious, but the church back in the day was a community center, right? And so when we are going to church less, when we, especially since COVID, have less, you know, physical IRL experiences, and there are no third spaces, you know, all the bookstores in my area are closed down, right? Those were, I think, one of the last third spaces. Where are we meeting people? So all of a sudden, our experience as humans has changed, and we're kind of like racing to figure out why we feel so bad because of it. And it's because social health is actually so important. So social health is really about the quality of your relationships. Do you have meaningful connection in your life? And do you have easy access to community? Because that's the other thing. It's not supposed to be so hard to find, especially because what sets humans apart from animals is that we are inherently social creatures. You know, one of a few key things, but that's certainly a huge part of what makes us human. So I'm really excited to see a bit more of this narrative coming out now. You know, there's been some really great books published on it recently. And it's certainly been studied a lot in the medical field, but just not too talked about until this crisis point. But at least we're getting to the root of the problem now.
Absolutely. And you're totally right. I mean, you know, social health is absolutely crucial. And I mean, I never like mentioning it. I know you mentioned it. I never like bringing it up, but COVID didn't help, you know. And I think not everybody, but some people became more reliant on technology, on social media. And it kind of, and again, not with everybody, but I think some people found themselves more isolating, relying more on social media. And some people still continue to today, you know, especially the youngsters, you know. So, and it's a shame, because it's nice to get out and really talk to people. I think also, I spoke to a lot of people around COVID, and I experienced this as well. When we were getting back out, there was like social anxiety.
Yeah.
Because we're interacting again with groups of people, you know. And it was, which, you know, it obviously it's about just trying to get out a bit more, maybe taking it in steps. But yeah. I totally understand what you're saying about social health, you know?
Definitely, definitely. It's so relatable, and I think speaks to why we need to be looking at it very closely.
How do you balance the serious topics community addresses, like mental health, harassment, ambition, and fun you also want users to feel within the space as well?
Yeah. So I think an overarching theme that community does differently is this idea of user control. You know, when you're on a meta platform, you don't really have control over what you're encountering. You're kind of at the whim of these platforms and their algorithms. On Communia, everything we do is around, you know, giving you the most helpful experiences possible. So that means that you get to set your topics. If you're not feeling emotionally safe enough to encounter Me Too or mental health topics that day, you can turn those feeds off. You are not required to see that content. In the same way, if you do want to see that content, you can go to those spaces, but you can also have them separate. And I think that's really important as a trauma survivor. I don't always want to be thinking about my trauma, but I also, at the same time, still want it to be there. And I don't want to be censored in that. So having that user control in how we've constructed the app and that experience plays a big part of holding space for sensitive, sometimes difficult conversations and the advice that we really need to find within that and each other, and also having fun. And so to have fun on the app, there are also so many ways. And one of the things that when I first started it, I didn't really think this was going to happen. We launched this social journaling tool as a self-development tool, right? Because actually a big part of social health is also the connection that you have with yourself. And so I made it social just in case people wanted to use it, and they loved it. And so now what's happening is that you can also use Communia to take people on a long-term journey, right? It's a little bit like blogging back in the day, but easier because it's multimedia. You know, you don't have to be an essayist. You're just expressing yourself. And so, you know, we have a user who the recent Taylor Swift album, you know, she made a digital journal just to analyze every single line because that was her passion. And she had so many followers on that and collaborators, and people were just so excited to dig into these niche interests and to do it in a way that you wouldn't be able to do it on another platform, because you're not going to be made fun of on Communia for your niche interest, right? If you are expressing joy, that's something that people want to see and are excited to see. It's not going to be promoted to people who don't want to see that. And so that user control, that sense of safety, those safety measurements that we take all kind of work together, not only to be able to facilitate difficult conversations, but also these really fun moments and moments in life that are made more fun by using Communia.
Absolutely. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
We hear a lot about male loneliness crisis. Why do you think female loneliness is so often overlooked, and how does Communia help address that?
Well, historically, women's health has been underlooked, period, right? And I mean, if you look at the stats, Women were really only included in medical studies in the last 20 years. That started in the 90s. That's crazy. So first of all, there's so little data in general on women's health. And that's why we see so many problems across the board, you know, in terms of women's health, whichever aspect of it you're looking at. That being said, with the loneliness crisis specifically, it's very interesting how this narrative has played out. And what a lot of people don't realize is in most of the content that is covering the loneliness crisis, whether that's on social media by a creator or even a publication, we're not seeing any actual statistics, right? We're not seeing statistics about how men are uniquely experiencing loneliness. We've seen statistics about how loneliness is a universal problem. Loneliness is a valid problem for men and women and non-binary people. Loneliness is a collective societal problem. It's something that affects all of us. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, we can't isolate it to one type of person, one sex or etc. or whatever it might be. Totally, you know, everybody can it can affect everyone. You know, it's as simple as that. And you know, we all need some level of help, or may need some level of help with how to, you know, how to manage that, you know. For someone listening who feels disconnected or unsupported online, what would you say to them about finding or building safer spaces?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I'd say is that it's not your fault. there is a big narrative as well around, you know, personal responsibility. But the thing is, it's very difficult to thrive in dynamics and systems that are broken. So we oftentimes blame ourselves for not having the courage to reach out. But like we discussed earlier, it can be very traumatizing to be rejected. And it's very hard to navigate these inherently flawed systems. So be kind to yourself in this process. There are very few general discussion platforms like Communia that are safe spaces. But if Communia isn't relevant to you, what you can do is start by looking for niche interest-based groups. And those spaces, you know, if because there's this shared interest, they are more likely to be kind, to be welcoming. And because you have that shared interest, you have an easier starting point when it comes to starting a conversation. And to that end, starting a conversation is always the hardest part. But if you can get up the courage to say hi to someone, everything after that is that much easier, whether that's in real life or in the digital world as well.
What role does community, especially female-led and safe communities, play in recovery, resilience, and mental well-being from your perspective?
Yeah, so many things. But something that, honestly, a therapist of mine in my own personal recovery journey said to me that really sticks out is you can't recover from a car crash if the car crash is still happening. And so if you, let's say, have experienced violence at the hands of a man, which is all too common. It really is another epidemic in our society right now. If you're then continuing to experience misogyny after that, it's very difficult to heal because the trauma is still happening. It's still compounding. And so that's why we need safe spaces and often woman-centric spaces, because that's the only way right now that we tend to get a break from things like harassment, things like misogyny. And so to have a refuge is very vital to recovery from trauma. And if you think about it, what's the number one thing that people say you need to do to rest a physical injury? That's rest. So we need that mental and emotional rest too, without being isolated. And unfortunately, that's really hard to find. But luckily, there are solutions like Communia if you're looking for them.
It sounds like you're also talking about people that use Communia who may experience PTSD. Would that be right? Because when you mentioned it a few times, it's happening for that person again, basically, yeah, in their mind. And does that relate back to PTSD, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's very important that I don't overpromise or overstate anything. And I think that's part of being a responsible platform. So I will say, you know, we're a social network that sees the very important role that we play in women's health. So in saying that, I do want to make sure I'm clear in that, you know, we're not a solve for PTSD. That being said, if you are experiencing those types of dynamics, we are a better place for you to be on than on a Facebook, where again, with this algorithm, you could be, you know, fed a piece of content that triggers you and puts you right back into that place. And I don't tend to talk about my personal experience too much lately, but I think this is a good place to do it. You know, I do have PTSD. And so if I see something really extreme on TikTok's algorithm, that happens a lot, I didn't ask for that. And that could ruin my day. That could put me in PTSD symptoms that I can't get out of. But even outside of these, you know, bigger, I think more self-evident examples, even being a young woman or any woman, because again, this is something that is across age groups. If you're constantly being abused every time you go online, that will have compounding mental health effects. And so even that is very valid to need a break from in order to protect your well-being.
Absolutely. Where do you see Communia heading in the next few years? Are there features or initiatives you're particularly excited about that will deepen your impact?
Yeah, I love that question. I think it really just comes down to increasing how we optimize for human connection and community. So with our social journals, one of the fun things about that is that you can work on these journals collaboratively. So you're not just talking at people, you're talking with people together. It's a shared community experience. And so we're looking to build upon that to make our platform really the best place to not only find, but also create and run your digital communities or your real world communities that need a digital aspect to it. And unlike pretty much every other tech platform out there, you know, we're really not leaning into generative AI. Everything that we're doing is around improving your ability to access human connection, human friendship, and community support that is too lacking in the real world. And so one way that we're doing that, and again, we've talked about emotional safety a lot today, is really working on a emotionally safe algorithm. And so what does that mean? We know what it means. Basically, it means to, that we're not going to just give someone, five pieces of the same content that are at increasing levels of extreme if they click on one thing. And stopping that dynamic alone actually is a huge game changer when it comes to online safety and healthy digital environments. So we're really just building upon that work more and more and trying to create more nuanced and helpful safety tools for the people that really deserve and need it.
Absolutely. If you could change one thing about how society talks about trauma and mental health, especially for women, what would it be?
I also love this question. These are great questions. For me personally, I think that it can be really damaging to have this phrase thrown around. A lot of well-meaning people will say this because they don't really know what else to say. And so I'm not getting down on you for this, but it's everything happens for a reason in response to a traumatic event or a event of violence. And those narratives, while we are trained to look for meaning to be able to move on, I don't think they're very helpful for survivors of trauma. And it's because there isn't actual any meaning that we can assign to violence, whether that's real life violence or online violence. And so when we assign that for ourselves in an effort to move on, we're actually holding ourselves back from moving on because we're looking for this meaning that isn't there. And it took me years to divorce myself from that concept. I will never find meaning in the violence that happened to me. And that was very hard to come to because of how we talk about this, because of this niche narrative within trauma. And so I would just ask, you know, listeners, instead of when you don't know what to say when someone, you know, is vulnerable with you and says that they've experienced trauma, maybe say something that is a bit more about holding space rather than trying to justify it. So, you know, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. That's enough. That is so kind. You don't have to go beyond that even if you don't want to or if you don't know what else to say. Because, yeah, everything happens for a reason. So common. It's not something that's said with, you know, harm intended, but it is very unhelpful for us, I think.
Absolutely. Olivia, thank you so much for your time today. If people want to reach out to you about Communia or to yourself for advice or anything like that, is it okay for people to get in touch with you? Is there maybe a social media platform that you're on, or who where can people find you?
Yeah, you know, I am most active on the Communia app. And so you can find that by searching in the App Store, Communia, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-A. Thought I'd spell it out since we're on radio. and I'm also on mainstream social media platforms personally at olivia.deramus. And Communia also has a presence on mainstream platforms if you search our Communia. And we give really great advice on these dynamics as well on there. And I love talking to people. And so much of our work is also around research. So don't be afraid to reach out and share your experience if what we've talked about today is something that's really relevant to you.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Olivia. Much appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.